As I remember, California State Polytechnic College, San Luis Obispo, presents another in a series of interviews with distinguished retired staff members. This one, Carl G. Beck. Carl, what was your first contact with Cal Poly, and what year was it?
It was in 1926 at the Del Norte Consolidated High School in Del Norte, Colorado, where I was teaching vocational agriculture.
And who was it that brought it to your attention?
There was the national regional supervisor, Mr. Skidmore, who was inspecting the schools there in Colorado, and he happened to come to Del Norte. And I met him, and he told me that he had just talked with a Mr. McPhee in California, and that he was told that they were looking for ag teachers in that state. And so I investigated from there on, and that's how I happened to get the bug to come to California.
And did you come that year?
No, we came in 1927. Muff and I and our little baby daughter, Jackie, came to California in a Model T coupe over roads which were not what they are today.
Did you attend a summer conference or something before you went to teaching?
I had to. In my correspondence with Mr. McPhee before, there were certain requirements I had to have for a teaching credential. And so I went to Berkeley. And there I met Mr. McPhee, Mr. Wren, Mr. Chapel, Mr. Demby, and Mr. Everett, and Mr. Dick Werner.
And did you have a contract to teach at that time?
I had no more of a job than a jackrabbit. I was without employment.
Well, something must have happened then.
Mr. McPhee knew that I was an ag teacher and knew how I had come. So then these men that I mentioned were very helpful. And they, one of the schools that I was told to investigate was Dos Palos. And we drove out there, and one of those hot August days, and it was too hot for us, so we didn't particularly like it. And then the other school was a middle town up in Lake County. I went up there and looked that place over and met the school board. I liked it because it was in the hills. And I'm very thankful that I accepted that job there for my first year's teaching in California.
And after you taught some little time at Middletown, you went on over to Calusa, is that right?
Yes, I taught 2 years in Middletown, and I'd been elected for the third year. But then this position opened up in Calusa, and I went over there and was hired by the board to teach agriculture there, so I went there.
And at Calusa, you must have made a very early reputation with your boys, with their activities and so on, because Mr. McPhee had kept his eye on you, and I assume that he contacted you then about coming down to San Luis Obispo.
Yes, I would say that we did a reasonable job there. And there was another individual that entered into this. It was one who had been at Berkeley same time I was, and that was Mr. C.O. McCorkle. And he was teaching at Red Bluff at the time. And this is another thing I didn't know until recently, that he had been a reader in one of the courses that I took at Berkeley. That's how I happened to pass it, I guess. But anyway, we had a good program. And we exchanged one meeting, the Red Bluff chapter came down and installed our Future Farmer chapter and all those things. So I mentioned Mr. McCorkle because he was brought to San Luis Obispo and Cal Poly to be chairman of the Ag Department.
And between he and Mr. McPhee, you came down here, what year was it?
I came down here in 1932.
Mm-hmm. And how big was the student body then? Do you remember?
Well, I'll tell you, the student body as I got, I tried to get some accurate figures on this, but I took a statement from Dr. Crandall as saying that during his presidency there, that the enrollment had increased till that year to about 400. Now, it didn't seem like that many to us. I know the enrollment in the ag department was very small. Mm-hmm. I'd say a maximum of 75 students if there were that many.
Mm-hmm. And what were the major departments at the school then?
The major departments at the school. But first, I'll tell you this, that it was not the Cal Poly it is today. It was a junior college. And they that was up to during Mr. Dr. Crandall's regime. There was a junior college one group and a junior college two group and then a third group. And the one group and the two group were dependent upon their high school and college credits. The third group were those students who were working on their high school credits. So
actually, then there was a state vocational high school with a junior college addition to it. Was that about what it was?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And what about the physical facilities here?
Well, now I can tell you about those physical facilities, and I kind of like to refer to those. Now, there were four dormitories here at that time. There was Dual, Chase, Jesperson, and Heron Hall. And I'll not go into to tell who they were named after or anything like that. The cafeteria was here, and it is now the post office, is what they're using at the post office. Then the Crandall Gymnasium was there, but it was not as it is today because it was remodeled. There was a stage in there, and it also served as an assembly room. Then there was Anderson Hall, coming up the hill, which was a classroom, and at various times it was used as a library, and the student store was in there, and various other things. Then there was the administration building, and it was one of the first buildings that were built in 1903. And then there's the agricultural building. Now, those three, Anderson Hall, the old administration building, and the Ag Ed building, the only one which remains is the Ag Ed building. Anderson Hall and the administration building were torn down to make way for a new administration building.
And that's the one with the clock tower on it?
That's the one with the clock tower.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a maintenance area, and that they had farm machinery in there, and one or two automobiles we had, and those things in there. It is not comparable at all to the corporation yard, which we have today. Then there was electrical engineering building down, and today I think it is used for the offices for the aeronautics people. And then there were aeronautics laboratory, and there was a blacksmith shop, and that was presided over by Henry Figge, a grand old man, and he was quite a disciplinarian. If he didn't have proper attention in that in his classroom, he would take the offender by the nape of the neck and the seat of the pants and throw him out of the building. It worked very fine. Then there was a machine shop, and then there was a carpentry shop. A carpentry shop shortly became the ag engineering shop, and a creamery and a feed mill. And up on the top of the hill, there was a feed mill. Now, that feed mill come into prominence because one of our students was in charge of that, and today he is an international authority on animal nutrition, and that's Dr. Tony Kuna of Florida University. Then there was a bull barn and the milk house in a horse barn, and there were about 7 draft horses in there, and 1 big stallion, Don. And there was a hog unit, which was an abomination on the hill. And they did some slaughtering there. Every time they slaughtered a hog, they set the barn on fire. There was an OH unit, and Ted House presided in there. And then there were 4 houses there, 4 old adobe houses. There's 3 adobe houses, and there's just, there was a Corlew house up Brizolero Creek, and W.W. Vernon's house that was up on the top of the hill above the campus. And then there is, down on the flat, there was what we used to call a Johnson house. That was where Rodney Johnson, I believe, was born there. And then there is a Dunning house, which was out on the Morrow Road, and consequently became the home of Harry Parker. Now, all the work on the farm was done by horses. Let's cut her off for a minute.
Go ahead.
All the work was done there by horses. Oh, and these horses, they were good breeding percherons. I think there were 1 or 2 Clydes in there with them, but they had been at the state fair and won prizes with them. We hadn't gotten to the tractor stage yet here. So I'd say here that that is a very rough discussion of what the physical facilities were like.
Carl, you've talked about the things that you found here when you came in the fall of 1932. Now, in 1933, Julian A. McPhee came down here from Sacramento and physically took over the direction of the institution here, and this instituted a new regime. Now, what were some of the things that took place very quickly under the new regime?
Well, I'll tell you, this goes back to the 1931 and 32 year, and I'd like to just refer here to some material that is taken from the annual descriptive report of the State Board of Vocational Agriculture, and that's for the year that ended June 1932. And here's a quotation. The agricultural education program will be extended to include the Agricultural Department of California Polytechnic School. The faculty will be paid partly out of state and federal funds and will be administered under the Bureau of Agricultural Education. The specialists on the staff will be used to assist in upgrading the teachers in the field.
Mm-hmm.
To implement this program, Julian A. McPhee, and incidentally, George, Julian A. McPhee has been my boss ever since I came to California, and I have very high regard for him, and I think I owe what success I might have obtained to his sympathetic consideration.
That's very good. That's right.
To implement this program, Julian A. McPhee, State Director of Vocational Agricultural Education, and to Cal Poly in the summer of 1931. J.I. Thompson, a graduate of Iowa State, to be livestock specialist. George B. Cooper, Oregon State, to promote the future farmers in Cal Poly. Now, I'd like to say here, too, that there are few people that know of the fine job that George Cooper did there and what he meant to Cal Poly, particularly from the standpoint of future farmers. I could tell you a lot of things about it, but he instituted the Future Farmer magazine here, which he had published for 35 years, and he brought the conventions and conferences and those things up to a very high degree of efficiency.
Who are some of the other people that Mr. McPhee brought in?
Well, now then, I'll have to get along here. One of them was George M. Drum. He was from Kansas State, and he was a dairy specialist. And Sidney S. Sutherland from Montana State, teacher trainer and specialist in agricultural mechanics. And on January 1, 1932, C.O. McCorkle, University of California, Davis, director of vocational agriculture, Leadbeth Union High School, was brought to Cal Poly as executive secretary of the California State Association of Future Farmers of America and chairman of the agricultural staff. In July 1932, the agricultural staff was further augmented by the addition of Vard M. Shepherd, Minnesota, from Minnesota, and he was director of vocational agriculture at Los Banos Union High School, to be in charge of Cal Poly Livestock and Animal Husbandry instructor. Alvin E. Hollenberg, Oregon State, instructor of agricultural mechanics at Watsonville Union High School, to be in charge of agricultural mechanics instruction. Wilbur B. House, University of California, Davis, an instructor at Venice High School, to be an instructor in ornamental horticulture and in charge of landscaping the campus. And Carl G. Beck, Colorado Agricultural College, director of vocational agriculture at the Calusa Union High School, to be in charge of the Cal Poly Future Farmer Work and an instructor in farm management. These men, together with Richard I. Leach, Montana State, who had been in charge of the poultry at Cal Poly since 1930, and Vernon H. Meacham, University of California, Davis, who had been Cal Poly since 1929 in the dairy department, constituted the agricultural staff. They were a harmonious group and worked closely together in furthering the objectives for the institution as laid down by Mr. McPhee. Now, these men here, they had very high, I believe the word is report. They were high esprit de corps. And I think many of the things which evolved into here as policies and procedure at Cal Poly originated with this group. And I always felt that I was fortunate to have been with the group such as they. Now, continuing this report, in the fall of 1932, a future farmer chapter was organized on the campus with the following students elected as officers: Albert Adams, president, and he's now in charge of the Orient Division of Foremost Dairies Incorporated. Lionel Middlecamp was vice president, and he's farm foreman at Cal Poly. And Lionel married into the San Luis Obispo as he married Betty Rigetti. And they had four children, one set of twins, and they all attended Poly. Ray O. Hamilton, secretary, now a successful dairyman. Louis Tennant, treasurer, now a successful rancher. Charles Stone, reporter, now on the staff at the Arizona State University. Edmund Yao, historian, now an instructor at Sunnyvale Union High School. At this time, Cal Poly was designated as a home of the future farmers and became the locale for the statewide agricultural judging contest and the annual state convention of the State Association of the Future Farmers of America. The California Agriculture Association also voted to hold its annual conference on this campus.
Okay.
100% of the agriculture students became members of the Future Farmers, and with the help and cooperation of the entire staff, set up an active program of work. Included in this program was the establishment of a livestock show. The purpose of this show was to display to the public the facilities at the school and the results of the work the students had done in their projects. It also gave the animal husbandry students an opportunity to fit and show their project animals on a competitive basis. prior to the Tri-State Junior Livestock Show, which was held at South San Francisco Stockyards. This show was of particular significance as future farmers and 4-H projects were exhibited there by members of the two organizations respectively. Cal Poly having a future farmer chapter also exhibited. Now, part of the program of work was a formation of a livestock show, which was set up here, and the show that was set up was called the Poly Royal. And this is taken from the minutes of a meeting here. This following is taken from the minutes of the first meeting of the Poly Royal Board. The board was appointed from, elected from the future farmer membership. The following names were suggested: Poly Royal, Little International, Cal Poly Agricultural Exposition, all to be followed with a subscript or explanatory title. It was moved and voted down that the last be adopted. It was then moved and carried that the first be adopted. A country fair on a college campus was chosen as the explanatory title, and it was decided to have the show on March 31st, 1933.
Carl, the officers of Poly Royal, which was the name selected, were not necessarily the officers of the Future Farmer chapter.
No. The chapter elected the officers of Poly Royal.
I see. And who were they the first year?
Well, the first year was Mike Stevens, and he, at the best of my information now, is a well driller at Simi. He had a set of twin boys, Pat and Mike Stevens, and he was back on the campus one time with these boys, but I had sort of lost track of them.
Now, what was his job?
He was the general superintendent. He was a big mogul of the first Poly Royal. Then Ray Old Hamilton was elected assistant general superintendent, and Charles Stone was chosen as secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Here.
That's fine. Well, those are the first officers. Then, did you have a queen the first year, and who was it?
No, we had no queen the first year. The queen contest started the second year, and our first queen was Jane Horton, and her brother has Horton's store out in Morro Bay, and she is the wife of James Bailey, the dean of students at Sacramento State College now.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been 34 queens since that time, and they have pictures of most of them in the student body office here on the campus.
And I'm sure that you got well acquainted with all of them and their duties as queen and so on.
I think one of our biggest headaches were the queens, to tell you the truth. You know, during before we had co-eds here, we used to get them from the high school and the junior college. But then the boys wanted to get more collegiate girls if they could, so we went to the state colleges. And we got the queens from the state colleges, and I think we went around the whole list of state colleges. There weren't 18 then, two times in getting queens. And there were some very nice girls there.
Well, when co-eds came in here, it did simplify things a lot, though.
Oh, yes. Yeah, very much so. And we've had queens here. ever since they bring in co-eds here. And our first Poly Royal queen was a young lady by the name of Valerie DeGuise.
That's the first one from this campus,
The first one from this campus,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say too much in praise of the Cal Poly queens. The student body, or the Poly Royal, a code was amended so that a girl to be eligible for the queen had to be a senior and in the upper 25% of her class in scholarship and show a good record in student activities. Mm-hmm. And she was to have the title then of Miss Poly Royal, Miss Cal Poly, I made a mistake there, Miss Cal Poly, Queen of the Poly Royal.
Well, very good. And I'm sure that the students and the girls particularly have always taken a great interest in who was going to be elected Poly Royal Queen and in the festivities and activities that have taken place at that time. And I think that it's pertinent to say at this time that you have been a worthy advisor of Poly Royal from its inception until the time you retired.
That is right. I've been called the father of Poly Royal. Vern Meacham used to call me the sire of Poly Royal. Now, it's a title that I take quite a bit of pride in, but I'll tell you what, no person could ever do anything like that, and if it wasn't for the cooperation of all the way down from the president of the college down to the custodians, we'd never could have a Poly Royal. And I always experienced that type of cooperation from the entire college.
Well, real good, Carl. Now, Carl, you very quickly became interested and active in an honor organization here on the college campus for agriculture students. What was it, and when was it formed?
Well, you know, I mentioned this agricultural staff of the people that came in 32 with J.I. Thompson and Cooper and McCorkle and those people, which were sort of an advisory group to the future farmer work. And we held our meetings, and this staff said that they wanted something that would recognize superior scholarship and activities in their agricultural boys. So it was put up to the future farmer chapter. And they decided, had committee, and they decided that they would set up an organization and call it the Cal Poly Degree. Now, this, of course, used to be secret, but that's where the Gamma Pi Delta comes from, CPD, Cal Poly Degree. Now, Gamma Pi Delta was organized in October in 1934. That's when it was installed and started. And the purpose of the club was to recognize outstanding accomplishments in scholarship, leadership, and project achievement on the part of agricultural students. Now, the eligibility. Any student in the agriculture department was eligible. However, the membership was not to exceed 10% of the agricultural enrollment of 1 year. Now, the requirements. No failing grades during enrollment. All grades must be passing or recommending. Show marked ability in leadership by holding student body or FFA offices. By outstanding winnings at various shows or by participation on athletic teams. Must have at least $200 productively invested in an agriculture project or managerial responsibility of some enterprise valued at that amount. Now, the charter members, I'll go through those quickly. Danny Galatro, Roland Lander, Charlie Ball, Nicholas Marquardt, Frank Stennett, Ray Hamilton, Louis Tennant, Charlie Hagemeister, Eddie Yao, Bud Davis, Harry Whiteside, and Elwin Rigetti. Officers, the first officers in this group, Danny Galatro was the first president. At the present time, he is a lab technician in the dairy industry in Los Angeles. Frank Stennett was vice president. Roland Lander was the secretary treasurer. And Mr. Luxinger, Oscar Luxinger, and myself were co-advisors. And they carried on a very ambitious program. They carried on community activities and took an interest in general college activities. It was a fine group.
Now, this organization continued for quite a few years, Carl, and then it became the nucleus for another honor group, and what was that?
That was Alpha Zeta. Now, I'd like to say some things about that. First, you might say, what is Alpha Zeta? Well, Alpha Zeta is an honorary agricultural fraternity. It was organized in 1897 at Ohio State University by Charles W. Burkett and John F. Cunningham. And it's known as the Townsend Chapter. Now, the purposes of those are scholarship, leadership, and character. Those of the Gampai Delta very closely correspond to those. We petitioned three times the Alpha Zeta General Council, and we were turned down twice. And once we were turned down because of some opposition from the state of California, where one person on the council said he'd never heard of a place at Cal Poly. But we put in our third application, and it was accepted. And I might say that we were the first chapter to break the land-grant college barrier. We were not a land-grant college, but we were taken in. We were the... We were the first chapter, as I say, of a land grant college, and we were installed on January 24th in 1959. Now this chapter involved both the San Luis Obispo and the Kellogg Voorhees campus. And we had, there were a large number of the staff members on each campus who were members, and they financed this California Delta chapter in its installation activities. we had two men from the from the General Council here, Dr. Lewis Madsen of Washington State University, and Mr. Fred LaCrone of Oklahoma State University. After installation, this chapter carried on a very active program. Say this, that maybe one of the finest things they did was the observation of the centennial year of the formation of the Department of Agriculture. And we took in as our honorary member Mr. Earl Koch, who at the present time is the director of agriculture for the state of California.
And what year was that, Carl?
And that was in 1962.
As I remember, reel two of an interview with Carl G. Beck. Carl, we've been talking about the Cal Poly FFA chapter. What were some of the service functions that it performed in the early days and for quite a period of time?
Well, if you will recall here, that one of the functions of bringing these men and all those into Cal Poly was to make a home for the future farmers. And one of the main things in that was that they would have their annual livestock judging contest here. Now that meant bringing in hundreds of boys from all these vocational agricultural high schools throughout the state. Now they had to have a place to stay. There was no maintenance department as it is today at the college. And there were no facilities. the college got tents from the army camp. Well, these tents had to be hauled in and set up. That became a function of the program of work of the Future Farmer Chapter. And Ray O. Hamilton was the first chairman in charge of that. And that continued for several years. And I know this, that it was not too difficult to get the tents from the Army, but it was rather more difficult to get them back to the Army in the conditions that they wanted, particularly with some of the sergeants they had out there. That worked pretty well. And I know one of the things of these, we set these tents up once down by the railroad tracks and kept the boys awake all night, and then had them set up on both sides of one of the roads, and they got into clod fights and things of that kind, which were just incident to youth, I suppose. Well, that was one thing. Then another thing is the schools were not as liberal with their buses, many of the students came in on trains and Greyhound buses. And these trains had to be met. And there were boys that stayed up all night and met these trains because they were better trained passenger service than we have today. That was another function. And I know one of those, we had an automobile out there that turned over on the way in. Luckily, no one was hurt. That was one of the functions of the chapter. Then another one was this, the chapter had a degree team, and they installed Future Farmer Chapter at the Shandon High School at the Paso Robles, I believe at Arroyo Grande, in Carpinteria, and put on initiation down at Ventura, and also one at Salinas. And that was another function of our Future Farmer Chapter. Then besides our fun nights that we used to have here on the campus and barbecues and beach parties and things of that kind. Now this changed when Mr. McPhee became director of vocational education in the state of California, and Byron McMahon became the chief of the Bureau of Ag Education, then all these functions passed on to the Bureau. And their course, they grew, became more involved and all that, and it was a very good move.
Not only was the Future Farmer Judging and Future Farmer Convention a part of a spring program here at Cal Poly, but in the summertime, the annual conference of the Agricultural Teachers Association was held here. Did the Future Farmer Chapter here at Cal Poly perform some service functions in connection with this group, Carl?
Well, there were some of the things there that fell the responsibility of the Future Farmer on the campus here, and I'd say this, it was mostly one of making physical arrangements. Here. For instance, the banquet was one, and the sports program, and things of that kind. The Future Farmers were involved to a certain extent of that, but I think that mostly the ag faculty became involved in on the CATA conference.
Well, that is a good point, and brings us to another observation, and that is that after the Bureau took over quite a bit of this function, another service group sprang up here on the Cal Poly campus that began to perform some very important service functions too. Now, what was that, Carl, and what's its history?
That is the region at large. Now, I'd like to go into detail a little bit on that. You know, we on the ag faculty, we took pride in being 100% membership in the Agricultural Teachers Association. And somewhere or another, I don't know, it fell to my lot to collect the dues. And as the school grew and more people came in, it were harder to do. And this one year in particular, it was very difficult. And you'd go around and ask for their dues, and they'd say, why should we pay dues? They ought to make us honorary members to that organization here. And that we don't have representation on the board, the governing board. And all these things were why they didn't want to pay their dues. Well, in this particular case, Arthur Godfrey was a state secretary. And he came over to see me one day to collect the dues that I had, and I gave him those I had, and then I told him just these things, that we were meeting objections here. The fellows didn't like to pay their dues. They weren't represented on the board, and these various things. Well, Mr. Godfrey's a very good friend of mine, but he took this report back to the governing board, and I don't believe he missed a thing that I told him. Well, that week I got a letter from the college administration. I will not mention names. And they said they wanted an explanation and why this was done and all that. So I wrote it out as best I could and sent it in. I told just exactly how it happened. And then the idea was that something should be done to kind of alleviate this situation. Well, then we started steps to amend the CATA bylaws to create a region at large. And that was for those people not definitely in high school teaching, but that were in college work at not only Cal Poly, but any of the other colleges, universities in the state that wanted to belong to it. Well, that went through the proper channels and through minor amendments here and there. Then it was passed. And the region at large became a reality. Okay.
Carl, while we're talking about this, was this opposition among the older men that had been high school agriculture teachers that come to Cal Poly on his staff here?
No, I'd say this, that we were getting more men here that had no experience in teaching in high school there. Of course, there were some of the former ag teachers, too, that did not see the full advantage of belonging to the CATA.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then, apparently, as things went on, there were a couple of divergent views as to just exactly how the region at large came to be formed. What were these, Carl?
Well, you know, one of my best friends out there is Harold Wilson, Pee Wee Wilson, that is. Well, the officers of our region at large had asked him to tell how the region at large came into being. Well, I don't think he had the right information. He got up and he gave an explanation. And then when they got through, I got up and asked them if they really wanted to know what happened. So I told them, and I had the information there. And it was in no intent to embarrass Mr. Wilson, because we've laughed over it several times. Well, I had a complete file on this deal. Every bit of correspondence that transpired passed between anyone there. And when I retired, I sent it over to Mr. Warren Smith, the Dean of Agriculture, asking him to preserve it for posterity. I don't know whether he has or not.
Well, I imagine that that's on file and is someplace where people that want to refer to it can find it. Carl, over the many years of the operation of the Cal Poly organizations and ag teacher conferences and so on, they had a lot of fun. And there was one organization that was connected with this group that certainly was formed mainly for the purpose of having a good time. Now, what was that one?
Well, that was the Yellow Dogs. Now, in early in 1935, someone at the college got a letter from Van Dyke. I believe he was at Petaluma. And suggesting that they start a chapter of the Yellow Dogs here on this campus. Well, somewhere or other I got involved on it. And we got the ag staff in there, and they took it up, and we had a preliminary initiation, so some of the men were, I don't know how it was all done now, the mechanics have slipped my mind. Anyway, we set it all up, and then on June 25th, 1935, we had the first initiation of the Yellow Dogs.
Now, is this a national organization, Carl?
Well, I think it is, and I know there are kennels. They have kennels, and there are several kennels in the state of California here, and particularly in the dairy industry.
Mm-hmm.
They have... Well, we, on this date here, we initiated 149 people, I think it was, into this organization. And it included, of course, the president of college, Mr. McPhee, and Mr. Verling Kersey, who was the state superintendent of public instruction. And I'd just like to mention this, that one of the ag teachers went into his office to see Mr. Kersey. And he sent his name in, and his secretary came out and said, Mr. Kersey is busy. He says, well, tell him I'm a Yellow Dog. And he got in there, and the next 2 minutes he was in there in the office talking to Mr. Kersey. Chris Jesperson, I believe, was in on it. And there were quite a few. And this carried on for several years.
But Chris Jesperson was a state senator here from this area. Is that right, Carl?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And Verlin Kersey was a state superintendent of public instruction.
And over the years, quite often, some very important state officials came down and were inducted into the Yellow Dog Kennel here. Isn't that right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Then, Carl, this was carried on year after year, initiation every year during the CATA conference, and a lot of fun and good fellowship came out of it. Then, as I recall, one time one of the officers, perhaps in the region at large, decided that this was just not the thing to do. You want to discuss that a little bit?
Well, I don't mind telling you, and I mentioned one name already, so... I don't mind mentioning another name because I'm still friends of these. And this other person was Dale Andrews. And he shared the opinion of a lot of people. They thought that this initiation, it was rough. It was rough, and it was humorous and all that. He thought that something else might be better. Well, anyway, he brought it up in a meeting, and I immediately defended the thing. And we argued back and forth, and then finally the region at large voted to continue with it. So we've still got it.
Well, we did have it.
I mean, we still had it at that time.
But really, what did cause the demise of the Yellow Dog Kennel here?
Well, it happens that the state legislature passed an anti-hazing law here. And this law was quite strict, and anyone that abused this law or were caught abusing it here would have their appropriations, would become involved in it. And anything that might cause any bodily injury or any offensive in any way to anybody, whether it was a person being initiated or an observer, could be considered against this law. So the college got the law, and they didn't want any part of it. And CAT didn't want any of it, and nobody wanted any of it. So it died a natural death, I suppose you could say. And I remember we tried to substitute a pseudo initiation for it, and that was the same night that Johansson got knocked out by Patterson in one round, you know. But it was a good conclusion to the Yellow Dogs because they got knocked out the same night.
Actually, of course, the law was directed at, for instance, fraternity hazing or class hazing, and really was never intended to apply to an adult organization like the Yellow Dogs, but they kind of were swept in and out by this law. Isn't that right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And, Carl, another organization that you took interest in and had a part in the leadership of was the Staff Club. You want to tell a little bit about that, when it was organized and what its functions were and so on?
Well, I'll tell you, I think there'd been a Staff Club here previous to 1932, but I'm not familiar with it at that time. But I know in 1932, the staff got together and started to organize. And if I remember correctly, you were the first president. Isn't that right?
Yes, it was in 1933-34.
Now, the purposes of this organization here was to create a better esprit de corps in the staff, have parties and things of that kind, and they were very effective. We used to have the men would prepare a dinner for the women, and then the women would reciprocate and have dinner, and we had shows. Remember one show we had, Mr. McPhee was a ventriloquist, and he had two dummies. George Cooper was dummy on one knee, and J.I. Thompson was a dummy on the other knee. I believe that was the year, George, that Alice Daniels lost her bloomers.
I think that's the same year,
all right. That's the same. Oh, well, we did a lot of things. I was elected president in 1958 and 59.
Somebody was interested in finding out who were the presidents of the Staff Club over the years. Where would they find that information, Carl?
Well, they'll find that information in the cafeteria.
What part of the cafeteria?
In the staff room. Staff room. In the floor, not on the floor, I don't mean. In the staff room, there's a plaque there with the name and the year of every staff president. And I believe that you were instrumental in getting that thing made.
Ed Jorgensen was actually the chairman. I was just working with Ed on that.
Uh-huh.
Well, Carl, another function that you had and took a great part in and ultimately went to work for was the Alumni Association of California State Polytechnic College. And I think at that time it was Alumni Association of both campuses. You want to tell us a little bit about the history and how you got involved in the thing?
Well, there'd been an Alumni Association since 1906. The records are non-existent. You can go back in some of the annuals and things of that kind and get some information on it. But I'll tell you, as the college grew, the alumni problem became more acute. And at the time when our enrollment was long, there were not too many seniors. And I'd say that this alumni problem did not really become a problem until after World War II. And then we had rather large classes here. Now, there had been several methods of districting the state and setting up the board of directors and those things, but it was not till, I'd say maybe 12, 15 years ago that the association became incorporated. And now, right at the present time, it's set up with 16 regional sections, each presided over by a chairman in that particular section.
And you worked that out, Carl, it was very effective, and I think this is true that a number of other colleges adopted this same plan that you worked out. Is that right?
That's right. At one of the meetings they had of all the alumni faculty representatives, they were given copies of our setup and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then
a year or so ago, you served as the alumni director for a period of how long was it, Carl?
I was the alumni executive secretary for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 1965-66. I resigned January 1st, 1967.
Mm-hmm. And I know that in that time you traveled a lot and got acquainted with alumni in their home areas over the state and so on. Isn't that right?
That's right. But there's one thing I think about the one of the biggest achievements was this, that we got the Alumni Association records put up on IBM now, which has greatly facilitated the record keeping.
Carl, we haven't mentioned anything about the years during World War II when everybody here had to pitch in and often do many things that he hadn't done before and maybe for which he hadn't had too much training. We went out and helped harvest the crops here on the Cal Poly campus, and we went out into the San Luis Obispo County and helped harvest crops here. Well, now, we've been talking here, and you've been telling about many of the activities in which you were engaged between 1932 and the time you retired. Tell me, Carl, did you ever do any teaching at Cal Poly?
I taught at Cal Poly for 31 years, and during that time I was 100% classroom teacher. I carried a full teaching load all the time, and I think this, that I had practically every ag student in a class of mine at some time or another during his matriculation at Cal Poly.
What was it you taught, Carl?
Well, I taught the farm management department, largely in a record keeping from an income tax standpoint, and I taught some mathematics. One time I was the mathematics department, and there was nobody else to teach it. And I taught horse skills, and I taught mathematics. I don't know whether I mentioned that or not. And one summer I taught history. So, Jim Merson needed an ag teacher one semester in ag mechanics. So I taught there. So Yes, I did some teaching.
Real good. Well, I knew you did, but we just hadn't said anything about it.
Yeah.
Well, Carl, it's been a real pleasure talking to you and bringing back your memories. Your period of service covers a great big span of Cal Poly. You were one of the gang in the early days, a group that McPhee sometimes refers to as the Pioneers, and you've had a chance to see the college change from a small, struggling, really a high school, up to the present great state college, state technical college with a worldwide reputation. So we bring this program to a close. As I say, it's been a great pleasure to had this opportunity to talk to you. This interview has been recorded by George P. Cooper.